Welcome to Evolving KM, a podcast where we discuss how knowledge management is progressing and the impact that's having on KM professionals. I'm Amy Monahan.
And I'm Gwen McAlpin. In each episode, we interview people who have either worked in or on the periphery of knowledge management. We get their perspective on how this profession is evolving to meet the shifting demands of legal service delivery. We hope you enjoy this episode. Today, we are talking with Toby Brown, who is the Chief Practice Management Officer at Perkins Coie. And Toby has a really interesting background coming from knowledge management and into the pricing field and growing that. Toby, do you want to tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today?
Certainly. Thank you for having me on this. This is going to be fun. So I was head of KM at Fulbright and Jaworski, which is now Norton Rose Fulbright. And I was in a, this was that 2007-ish. I'm trying to remember the exact time frame. It was around the time of the Great Recession. It was after the Lehman collapse. Mm-hmm. And I was presenting on knowledge management to leadership. It was a Tuesday morning. And the theme was knowledge management is going to become mission critical because back then, instead of calling it pricing, we called it alternative fee arrangement.
Right.
And I included a quote from the general counsel of ConocoPhillips. And the quote was essentially, if you're thinking about asking for a rate increase, don't bother. And if we already granted you a rate increase, we just changed our mind. and so I put that up there, and it was a Tuesday morning. These two partners like rushed me afterwards and said, what do you know about alternative fee arrangement? And I said, well, I've research them, and I've actually written articles on them for years. I've been waiting for the profession to say we're ready for this. I said, why? They said, we have a client who's asking. And it was an oil field services, a pipeline company. That was Tuesday morning. We had that conversation. Friday morning, I was in front of the general counsel of that pipeline company negotiating. I still remember it. It was a holdback success fee where we said, we'll bill you, you know, and I'm giving anything away because it's so old. I think it was 20. We held back 20, 25% of our fee subject to them being happy with the outcome. And then we had an uplift if they were really happy with the outcome. And they ended up being very happy with the outcome. And so we actually had a windfall on it. So these two partners start talking around saying, hey, Toby can help you with this if you want that. So pretty soon I'm getting cornered all the time about alternative fee arrangements. Mm-hmm. And like 3, maybe 4 months later, I go to my boss and say, everyone's cornering me on alternative fee arrangements. What should I do? And well, you need to focus on KM. And so don't be out proselytizing this. And I'm like, okay. So another month goes back and I said, went back to my boss and I said, okay, all I'm doing is alternative fee arrangements because everybody's coming to me. And I still remember they said, are you sure you want to do this? Because I've been passionate about knowledge management for years. And they said, you're going to have to let go of KM. And I said, I'm not worried. I said, because it's going to come back. Because at the core of KM, it's about efficiency and effectiveness.
Right.
Which is, if you're under a fixed fee, what are you trying to do? And effectively, it did come back to me. So, but since then, my role has actually changed even more dramatically. Well, quickly, I established an alternative fee program at Fulbright, which was how we reviewed and assessed requests for alternative fee arrangements, which quickly made me an expert on law firm profitability, which is not shocking for most people who do this, that law firm partners actually know very little about law firm, what makes a law firm profitable. Then I ended up moving to Vinson and Elkins briefly and established theirs. Then I went to Akin Gump and established theirs. So let's just say I got really good at building pricing programs. But as that evolved, what happened was the partners would come and said, okay, Toby, you helped us win this deal. Now what do we do? I'm like, well, you provide the service in a profitable fashion. And they're like, yeah, okay, what do we do in order to do that? And so what that opened the door to was, all of the stuff the industry talks about, legal project management, practice innovation, process improvement, all of those things And so at Akin Gump, one of the reasons I had took them up on their offer to move over there was because they'd sort of laid out a path. And so I went over there originally as their director of pricing, but became their chief practice officer. So I took over practice management. And, you know, the sort of joking way I refer to it is I get these partners into these situations, and now I can help get them out of them in a profitable fashion. So at Akin Gump, and in fact, my moniker has become here at Perkins Coie is I'm the prophet of profit.
We're going to have to get you a t-shirt.
That's right.
So what started at Akin Gump and really has blossomed here is, you know, what is it at a firm that drives profitability? And so at Akin Gump, guess what came back to me? Knowledge management. Mm-hmm. And the library. And then now whenever I touch something, it's how do I use this, either how do I make it profitable or how do I leverage this to increase the profitability of a firm? So at Akin, on the KM side, I would say there would be three legs to it. On the library side, we restructured the libraries, you know, and I still say this all the time. In fact, I was interviewed on this subject last week, and I refer to librarians as the lowest cost, highest value resource in a firm. So if you're doing fixed fee work, what's the front line for that? And librarians are really knowledge professionals. So they have the background, they have a subject matter expertise, so they're a great resource to leverage in this way. So that was like one of the legs. The other two legs, I sort of see two tracks, you know, I'll call it for traditional knowledge management. One is the very traditional, I like to call it the backbone, and that's enterprise search, it's experience databases, all the sort of, you know, document management, all the classic KM tools.
Bread and butter KM, yeah.
Yep. Exactly. And those have to be there, they have to work, they have to be world class. Mm-hmm. However, as I used to say at Akin Gump, when I oversaw this, that I don't think our enterprise search challenges keep the managing partner up at night. Which is my way of saying it doesn't have a direct impact on the profit needle. Old friend of mine, Kingsley Martin, who's also in the KM space, he would say, how many steps are you from profitability? And so that backbone, it's very important and required, but it's a few steps away. Mm-hmm. So the other track of KM, which is where I think a lot of interesting things are happening today. I started calling it, because as many KM professionals know, when you say knowledge management, lawyers' eyes glass over.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that? Yes.
Yep.
What does that mean? And so I started referring to it as practice innovation. Mm-hmm. And it was, what are the sort of cutting edge tools and approaches that are out there that will help us deliver our services at a lower cost of delivery? Which is a new concept for them and our industry in general. So what's going on there? I think lots of interesting things are going on there. So at Akin Gump, I was in an airport. I think I'd had a few drinks, and I ended up taking over the e-discovery unit at Akin Gump.
Let that be a lesson not to have too many drinks at the
airport. Absolutely, absolutely. But even that, I absolutely made that more profitable at Akin Gump, but I don't want to get back into that. So I move over to Perkins Coie, need to yet again build out a pricing function, which we're well into that here. What's under the umbrella here at Perkins Coie? The practice management team, obviously, and I see those sort of the frontline people that identify the needs of where practice innovation needs to happen, because they are essentially the directors of operations for our business, our practice group. The pricing team, which is sort of the profitability center, I'll call it, which is where pricing, legal project management, and there's actually quite a few projects that are built around driving profitability as well. Mm-hmm. Next one is the paralegals. The director of paralegals reports to me, and of course we're focused on how can we improve margins there. As of January 1, pro bono came over, and that's actually – well, I took that for two reasons. One, to preserve my soul, but also it's become a very client-facing thing. A lot of clients are coming to us saying, we struggle with how we get pro bono for our in-house teams. Can you help us? And so we partner with them, and actually we partner with them very deeply, so our lawyers are side by side with their lawyers doing pro bono. So that came over on January 1st, and about a year and a couple of months, lateral partner recruiting came over to practice management, which I'll just say is a fascinating and very political landscape, but it's definitely tied to moving the profit needle. So I guess I tried to keep it short, but it could have been a little shorter. But hopefully I touched on some good topics there.
No, that was great. You touched on a lot. That leads into nicely what I wanted to ask you about. So you've seen knowledge management change. You've been pretty much at the forefront of all the changes. What do you think are the biggest opportunities right now for KM professionals? And does it fall under the innovation arm of knowledge management as opposed to the bread and butter, as Gwen calls it, knowledge management?
Probably more on the innovation side. And I mentioned earlier about, you know, how do you reduce the cost of delivering legal services? And there's really two core ways. You use cheaper hours or you do it in fewer hours. And so at its core, and this is scary on a lot of different levels, it is replacing lawyer functions mm-hmm. with process and technology.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, what is it lawyers do that we could effectively automate? So how I would advise a KM person is to really engage with the practices, engage with the partners, and find out where the pain is. This is what I do. I consider the highest value function I perform is talking to clients. When I talk to clients, I'm trying to get them to share their pain. What is your pain? And so I would do the same thing. I would advise of doing the same thing with the partners in your firms. So we are all, and even myself, get into situations where it's like you get very excited and very motivated by new technology. And you want to go say, look, isn't this an awesome technology? And this will solve all these problems in your life. And that, you should flip that around, because what that is a solution in search of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
What you're better off doing is identifying the problem. And then, you know, I like to say I have a tool belt, and I'm always trying to add tools to it. You know, I know there's an interesting technology, or I've heard about this firm who's approached this challenge in this way, so that when the problem comes to me, I can say, well, here are some ideas I think might help you solve that problem. So be very focused on problem solving, but you really got to get out in front of the partners to be able to ask them these questions and understand their pain.
Definitely. I think also there's a level of, you know, there's a rapport that you have to build with your practice groups, and a level of trust, because then when you do come to them with a solution, especially if it is a piece of technology, you know, there's a bit of skepticism among attorneys. So it's helpful if it comes from a trusted source. Yes, just a little.
Well, and that gives me another thought as it crosses back into when we were talking about how I ended up here is, align yourself and kiss up to the pricing people, because they will also know where the pain is, where the challenges are. In fact, this is advice I used to give various people, even pricing people. When I was at Akin Gump, the finance team was in D.C. And whenever I went to D.C., I took the two key people there either to lunch or dinner every time. And what I was doing was kissing up to them, because I was highly dependent on them to do what I did. And so I would suggest, you know, look around within your firms, and I'm guessing this is going to lead to Christina getting some free drinks from you guys, but don't worry. She'll probably put it on our budget. But it's basically embedding yourself with them, because they're the ones that are going to turn over the rocks and go, we need.
Right.
You guys already know this. At Perkins, we have a problem here. We can use your help solving it.
Right, right. Yeah, you guys really have your ears to the ground for everything.
Yeah, and I think that's been a really fruitful partnership. It is one of the, I think KM is kind of a role as a connector
and needs to know and have relationships across the firm to understand those pain points, to be able to kind of interpret between different groups, you know, whether it's departments or practice groups, their different needs and pain points. I certainly appreciate working with your pricing team, and we'll take them out to drinks. So as we talk about how KM has kind of evolved over the years, I think that all of us have on the KM side have looked pretty favorably on this trend towards alternative fees and, you know, looking at pricing in different ways and looking at efficiency, because it really puts some backbone into the efficiency argument. And, you know, as you were talking about with enterprise search, as an example, being a little removed from profitability and being something that's more like, you know, it's good for you, but maybe not as directly impactful of the work. So as KM is starting to move, you know, still sort of supporting some of these traditional KM functions, but moving more into this more modern sort of practice innovations, I think we're seeing some change in KM teams as well, and how people are needing to staff up those teams. So what are some of the skills that you're seeing that KMers need to, you know, either develop themselves or go out and find to add to their teams?
I would say off the top of my head, two that I could see would be sort of process engineering and project management. Because one of the things, you know, when we look at how do we get more efficient, more effective, A, we need to understand a process, develop a process, and then improve a process.
Yeah.
A lot of that, when we inject KM into that, you know, discussion, is going to be how do we automate a piece of the process or make it more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding process and process improvement would be a great skill. The project management one, not to become a project manager,
right,
but again, to understand it. You know,
yeah.
And in fact, I did, when I was at Akin Gump, I went and took a project management course. It was a week-long course, University of Houston sponsored, and it was extremely valuable. I did not want to become, you know, a frontline project manager, but man, it opened my eyes up to better ways of addressing problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those would be two key skills. And something you noted actually in the question, Gwen, which is, I don't know if it's a skill as much as knowledge you need to build, would be on profitability. You know, I joke that most partners don't understand profitability, and I'll give the thumbnail of why this is important. Law firms look at profitability most often in a cash basis way.
Right.
This cash basis versus other accounting terms. What that means, cash basis means, and most law firms are run this way, is that in 2018, we're going to have a certain amount of revenue. 2018, we're going to have a certain amount of expense. Revenue minus expense equals profit.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, that is correct. However, that's not very actionable information. And so what I do, I spend a lot of time teaching partners and, frankly, the business services sides of the firm as well, to say what profit in an actionable view is. This matter generated $50,000 worth of revenue. What was the cost? And you've heard me use this term a few times, cost of delivering that $50,000 worth of revenue. Now, the difference between the cost of delivery and the revenue, that is profit for that piece of work. The problem with the cash basis is if someone works an hour on January 1st, the firm will realize that revenue in late April or early May, because it doesn't get billed until the end of February.
Right.
And most firms will have like a 60-day average window of collection. Some do a little better, some do a little worse. So you don't realize the revenue. So the revenue is disconnected from when it was the cost was incurred to generate it. I advise binding those together to say, okay, I can look at a matter, I can look at a client, I can look at a portfolio of work and understand the profit margin on that work. I would think that would be a key knowledge point the KM people would very much benefit from. Plus, it really drives the KM, drives your thinking around KM. You know, when I say, will this move the profit needle, you'll understand whether it does or doesn't and how it does.
And finding those opportunities where there are opportunities to move the profit needle versus, you know, chasing after maybe a type of work that doesn't have as much opportunity related to profit, kind of understanding how those work together. And I have been in the room when you've been giving your profitability presentation to partners and just seeing the realization dawning on faces. It's impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I've only seen it on demand. I haven't had the pleasure of seeing
No,
the
it's
in-person
actually good when
reactions.
see live with other with attorneys just to watch their reaction. Because it is important to understand the profitability and not just as, you know, as you say, kind of the cash basis as a whole, but how each matter is impacted and the choices that you make on a matter and how you do that work. Because we do have a lot of choices now. And there are some of the things that we're bringing to the table with KM that, you know, they may not be mandatory for a group to use some of the tools and processes that we can offer them unless it's something we've negotiated with a client. And so they may think that it's, you know, it's too hard to make the change, but they have to kind of make that connection towards the profitability of that matter. So that's,
yeah.
I think that's interesting. I'm gonna go back to school. <Do more up-notch. laughs>
I think anyone, no matter what industry you're in, you manage your own projects every day. So a little bit of project management skills won't hurt anyone.
No, mm-hmm. No. So, and you've actually given me, this conversation has given me another piece of advice or another idea. Although this one, I'll put this one up in the stretch goals thing for a lot of KM people. And it's when you can make connections with clients and their operations teams.
Yeah.
I know you may not have a lot of opportunities. I'm in a very lucky and fortunate position to where the lawyers actually shove me in front of the clients because they're afraid to talk about fees and rates and all those sorts of things. So I'm very fortunate that way. But I'll just tell you from experience that clients, in fact, I'm not going to share the name of the client. This is a client that has about 200 lawyers, and they have 7 people on the operations side.
Mm-hmm.
So how much support can they be giving that? Imagine a 200-lawyer firm only having 7 people on the business services side of the firm. That would be insane.
Yeah.
The point there is that the client doesn't have knowledge management. It's highly unlikely they have anyone designated for knowledge management. So people like, you know, you guys who have this depth and wealth of experience around KM, it's not that you're going to go in and install a document management system for them, but you can go in and say, okay, here's some ideas about KM that could probably help you that are low cost or no cost, and they're more just changing the way you do things. So if you can get that client interaction, I would highly recommend you seek that out. In fact, I'm going to tell a story, and I'm absolutely not going to tell the name of the client. And I've known a couple of clients that have done this. Demonstrates their, you know, lack of experience and knowledge around KM. This client says, if you are sending any documents to our legal department that have legal advice in them, memos or legal opinions or whatever, CC this email address. And when I first saw this, I was like, oh, my God, this is like knowledge management from like 40 years ago on a bad day. And I knew the ops person, and I called, and he said, you know, I counseled against that, but why would you, you know, he goes, I don't have a background in knowledge management. Why would you say that? And I said, well, I said, I understand why this sounds like it makes sense because, you know, why would, you know, and I'm going to guess, and I did guess correctly, that the motivation was, if we've already paid for this advice, we don't want to pay for it again. And he goes, yeah, that's exactly it. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you haven't solved that problem. And he said, why? And I said, well, you have a steaming pile of knowledge management because you don't have metadata. It's not organized. It's not searchable. It's not consumable. And he goes,
it's
well, yeah,
consumable.
It's all
consumable. There's no real... So many things that are challenging with it, but there's no real incentive for people to contribute to it or to refer back to it.
Exactly. And I said, so someone wants to know, has this question been asked and answered already? They're going to go search this steaming pile of knowledge management. So let's say they find a document that has what appears to be a relevant answer. Should they trust that answer? And the answer is no, they should not.
No, they have no idea what the context is.
Right.
No. Right. It could have been the wrong jurisdiction. The law could have changed. There's just all these things. And so I still remember the conversation with in fact, I'll even say this was how, and I'm not saying they're they're dumb or anything. They're just not experienced in
They're not
KM,
experienced, right? And they could
which is
benefit from some, we've learned some lessons on things that
basic,
work better
yeah.
than others. And let's talk about things that do or don't work. And, I've had a couple of conversations with clients with that. And it's not like you have to come up with some sort of rocket science. There are
No.
lessons learned that we have over the years that we can just help them figure out with what you're dealing with. Here's some strategies that you can apply to address it.
Absolutely. And this client further demonstrated their lack of knowledge when they said, well, it's something and something's better than nothing. And I said, I don't know that I would agree with that. I said, plus, your law firms. And they said, well, this is really easy for the law firm. It's no sweat off their back. And I said, oh, yes, it is. I said, every law firm you ask to do this, they have to send out regular notices reminding all of their lawyers if they're sending documents like X that they need to copy this email address. And I said, plus, every law firm has set up a shadow email address so that they know every document that's been sent to that email address. And his eyes got kind of wide and he was like, oh. I said, so what you've done is actually drive up the cost of your law firm's, delivery of services to you. And and I could see the thing sinking in. He said, yeah, but I'm not going to get my legal department to change this. I didn't think about that coming into this podcast. It's a great example of how a KM person can get involved on the client side, bring tons of value to a conversation with a client about something.
We're definitely seeing a lot more interest from clients in learning about knowledge management and different strategies and methodologies. So there definitely is a rise in this sort of consultancy area. So we've been asking the folks that we've been interviewing how they stay current on the changes going on in the legal industry. What did they do to serve their own professional development needs? But I feel like you are one of the ways that
You're one of
people stay
the
current.
sources.
So can you talk a bit about the importance of sharing, your knowledge and observations and your views via, your authoring opportunities, your speaking opportunities, all the professional organizations that you have started or lead, social media. I mean, you're very prolific. So can you just talk a little bit about the importance that you see in that, and then also how you stay current on these types of topics?
Certainly. Number one, be curious. Because a lot of times I get questions, they're like, Toby, you touch all these things. Which book should I read, or which resource is going to give me enough knowledge? And the answer is there isn't one. And there's no like well-defined area or what should you look at that can answer that question. So you really have to be curious. And I'm naturally sort of very curious. As my wife likes to say, I get bored easily, so I'm always out reading, listening to podcasts, all kinds of things like that. In fact, I'm going to turn the Wayback Machine to my days at Fulbright. I invented this at Fulbright and was one of the early people into the field, and I kept saying, look, I want to go talk about this. And they're like, no, this is the secret sauce, and you're going to be giving away all this stuff. I'm like, really, this is not that. This is not sophisticated finance or anything like that. There's not a lot here. And they kept holding me back. And finally, I just begged them. I said, let me do one presentation. So they said, okay, you can do this one. I remember because it was in New York. And, this was like 4 or 5 months ahead of the presentation. So, like a month and a half ahead of the presentation, they're now marketing it. And so, in one of my, this is a meeting with my alternative fee committee at Fulbright. And they said, oh, did people see this program coming up on alternative fee arrangements? Look, one of our clients is speaking at it. One of us needs to go. And they sort of talk through, and I let them talk for a minute. And they said, well, Toby, what do you think? And I said, who else is speaking on the panel with that client? And there was this pause, and they said, well, you are. And I said, yeah, I think we've got it covered. And after that, they were like, you can go do whatever you want to do. Because they realized the client was now going to be impressed that our firm was involved with this and had knowledge around it and stuff like that. In addition to being curious, I'm a proponent of sharing knowledge. At times I've had people, in fact, a former chief knowledge officer from another firm who was like, we don't talk about this stuff and we don't share it. And I said, you know, I get why you would want to keep it really close, but most of what I've learned because I share and people share back.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
there are times where I share things that I think are actually very valuable. In fact, I remember one time somebody came up to me and said, you know, now that you've shared that, other firms can copy that. And I looked him in the eye and I said, good luck catching up with me. Because this is not easy stuff. And unless you've got, as you guys have pointed out, trust with the partners and all those sorts of things, this stuff is not easy.
Right.
You really have to put your foot on the gas and drive it forward. So I have acquired a lot of this knowledge because I share, you know, as you were alluding to, I was the founder of the P3 conference. I learned so much from my participation there. Another thing I founded, I think you two may be aware of it. This is a brief commercial announcement here. The following was brought to you by.
Course.
I've been very involved in founding a standards organization
Oh, yes.
for the legal
Yeah.
industry.
Please talk about that. Yes.
It's called SALI, which again, I probably had a couple of beers when I came up with that name.
It's where the best
It
ideas
stands.
come from.
Well, actually, I like it because it's memorable, it's catchy, you know, and it's short. And what SALI, it's an acronym, Standards Advancement in the Legal Industry, SALI. So SALI.org is where the website is for this. And this is actually, I hadn't thought about this before. This is extremely pertinent to the KM world. The way that came about was I'm well known for trashing on task codes because many people believe, and I get why, because originally I did. When I was at Fulbright, I believed this, that, oh, the task codes are going to tell us how much we should price our
Yeah.
work and the segments of our work at. On its face, it makes sense. In practice, they're utterly worthless. In part, they're a standard designed, it's an e-billing data exchange standard. It's not designed for pricing or budgeting or project management. The e-billing data exchange standard. So I trashed on those for years, and finally someone said, well, what should we do? And I said, well, let's look at it. You're trying to figure out how much a deposition costs. Actually, the task codes won't tell you that. But even if they did, I would say, what kind of deposition? Is this for labor litigation, patent litigation, you know, commercial litigation, construction litigation? What's it for? I said, if it was me, what I would start out is with what kind of work is it? And that happened in a bunch of conversations, and a group came to me and said, okay, how do we do this? And will you do this? And I have a very quixotic background, I'll say. Years ago, I was on the board of something called Legal XML, and I was very involved in creating the court filing standard. So when you do an e-filing with any court, it utilizes an XML standard that was developed by Legal XML. So I actually had a background in standard setting. And standards are a hard thing to, it's hard to communicate the value of a standard because it's boring. But the simplest thing is that at Akin Gump, I would go to the managing partner and I would say to her, we don't know what we sell. And she goes, well, of course we do. And I said, well, we actually can't go in our database and say, how many of type X matter have we sold in the past or have we provided to clients, however you want to say it, the clients in the last 6, 12, 24 months. I said, we can't do that. We had, and you know, this is not unique to Akin Gump, over 500 different matter types.
That sounds
200 of
familiar.
which,
Yep.
this, you know, any KM professional will go, duh.
Yeah,
And I did the
right.
research. 200 of them were never used, and 20 of them were always used. And the 20 that were used were general corporate, general litigation, general patent litigation. And so I actually became a bit passionate about it and started going around talking about it and saying, wouldn't our industry benefit if we actually had a standard taxonomy of matter types so that when a client says, I want you five law firms to bid on this work, there was a common understanding of what the work was. And I started talking to about clients. This guy is now retired. His name's Bob Harcutt. He was head of, I'll call it alternative fees for GlaxoSmithKline. I described it to him and he said, Toby, if you can do that, he says, we're in. He goes, because we put out a proposal and the five bids we get are all completely different. So Sally's first standard, and I call it, Sally is a standards body and is there to develop many standards over what will probably be a long life, hopefully a long life. The first one is what I would call matter types. Mm-hmm. And it's really, so, and I'll give you like the five, you know, high level buckets. It's disputes, transactional, it is regulatory, it is advice and counsel, and then the fifth one, because these are the snowflakes of the legal world, is bankruptcy. Because bankruptcy is an odd blend of litigation and transactional and regulatory. So,
right.
So then you can say, okay, disputes, you could say there's arbitration, mediation, and, you know, court litigation. And then under court litigation, you could say there's criminal and civil. So you'll see there's a hierarchy, and mm-hmm. we're currently deep in or well into developing that hierarchy with mm-hmm. how the standard can be used and all those sorts of things. And in fact, we're going to hold a standards meeting at ILTA, at the ILTA conference. We held one at the P3 conference in May, and the next live in-person one will be at during the ILTA conference in D.C. in August. Mm-hmm. If I was a KM person, I would probably be really, really interested in what Sally is doing.
Yeah.
And we can proudly say the first law firm to join Sally was Perkins Coie.
Woohoo! Good for us.
So that's a little throw down to the other KM people out there.
Yeah, this is a bit of a biased podcast episode.
Slightly. We can admit that. We should put that disclaimer in the beginning.
No,
of this.
I agree. KMers should be absolutely interested in Sally. I can't tell you how many times. I mean, this is almost a daily occurrence where things that relate to taxonomies that don't quite work or have sprawled in some manner. This just comes up all the time, and particularly as we get more and more into how we use our data and being able to mine the data within a law firm. If it's not good data to begin with, there isn't a lot you can do with it.
Right. There was a period of time where people, I remember it a couple of ILTAs ago, heard in pretty much every panel about, you know, how law firms are just dearths of data. There's so much data to be discovered in law firms and used, but it's a lot of bad data. It's not structured in a way that's meaningful.
It actually brings up a related topic, which drives a little bit back to the standards. I think some interesting technologies that are emerging that if I were a KM person, I'd keep an eye on are, and this is very much a KM term, that can look at crappy data that we have and much like e-discovery predictive coding, create metadata. Because
mm-hmm.
predictive coding and e-discovery is just really creating, it's predicting what the metadata is.
Yeah.
But I would keep an eye on technologies that do that. That mm-hmm. say, I can read, in fact, I talked to an e-discovery vendor like 4 or 5 years ago saying, can you solve this problem for me? And the problem was, can you analyze emails, time entry, and documents, and then come back to me and predict what kind of matter I'm looking at?
Mm-hmm. That would be nice.
And what they said was yes, but I had this problem, and it's that there is attorney-client privileged information in all three of those buckets. That I couldn't just let an e-discovery vendor chew on.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's obviously ways you can pass that, but in that environment, I couldn't. And the e-discovery vendor was too busy doing e-discovery to come back around to it. So I was just going to try to use a known technology to solve a problem. How does this take us back to standards? They said you'll need a matter taxonomy with, we'll have to go through learning cycles, and what do you want to teach
it? Right, what do you map it to?
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So if it's an industry standard, it has way more value than if it's just some internal taxonomy.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. I'm going to definitely keep an eye on what's going on with Sally. Well, Toby, thank you very much for chatting with us today. This has been great. I covered quite a bit of
thank you so much.
Practice management and profitability, pricing. So this has been great. Thank you very much.
Certainly. And I hope KMers find value in this. And I'll even put out there, and I talked about how I like to share. Someone listening to this says, hey, I've got this question. Shoot me an email. In fact, I will tell you just before, one of the reasons I was 2 minutes late before I joined this call was that somebody I know who's in the legal project management space said, do you have 15 minutes? because they had a question, and it was that they're actually a consultant, and they had questions for one of their clients, a competitive law firm. I'm like, sure, let's jump on the phone. So I learned something in that. They probably learned a little more than I did. but that's how I learn, and I'm open to that. And I will tell you at the bottom line, what motivates me is having an impact on this industry. I actually, years ago, I worked for the Utah State Bar. And back then, I didn't care as much about profit. I actually cared about this odd thing called access to justice. And
well, it's kind of background now that you've got a pro bono.
Pro bono, yeah.
Exactly. And I looked at it and said, this industry has got to embrace change.
Yeah.
Or it, and it's not like, well, the insurance companies took over healthcare. This we already know. So doctors thought change wasn't, that they could control the change, and they couldn't. What's on the line here is actually the rule of law. And so I'm very passionate about driving success and change and innovation in the legal industry. Very passionate about it. I think the legal industry has a special duty to actually figure this stuff out. That being said, we also have a significant challenge, and it's something I coined. I coined this phrase in 1999, and it's, I call it the paradigm of precedent. And it's that our industry looks backwards to solve problems. And so it's a significant challenge, but I think KM people are extremely well positioned to actually have an impact on it. You know, I'll repeat, somebody wants to reach out to me, you know, absent me being completely underwater, I'll respond. So I throw that out there as a parting gift.
We'll be sure to include your email address in our show notes.
Good.
Well, thank you so much, Toby. This was a fantastic conversation.
Thank you guys for having me.